you are concerned about someone finding a vulnerability in legacy software, and yet the way in is a misconfigured RDP terminal. So like, let's be honest, and I apologize for this little soapbox rant, but like from a cybersecurity perspective, this is being concerned about the number of cylinders in a Ferrari when your Honda Civic needs a service.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, weekly Intel chat. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. Joining me today to break down the cybersecurity news being shared by the awesome InfoSec community is the one and only Matt Bromley. And don't forget, this podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for security operations. Think of it as a backend for your MSSP, where everything is built API first. Scale with ease and confidence as your business grows. You can start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it.
How you doing, Matt Bromley?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing well. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. It's been quite an exciting week for me. We had a board meeting, and okay. We purchased our first home, which is that's
congratulations.
Yeah, I'm turning 48 in June. I figure like I squeaked in under the wire, maybe.
There you go. Yeah. Good for you, man. Congratulations. That's awesome news. I know on this podcast you've talked multiple times about potentially closing on one, and I didn't realize how long this process can take in just some areas.
So. It can take a little while, and it's been a learning process, and yeah, we're just excited. I have two kids, so having a family home has always been a big goal. So feeling really good, kind of tired. Gonna get this one recorded with you, and then probably go take a nap.
All right, well, tell you what, let's get to it so you can get to napping, sir.
All right, starting off, researchers are raising concerns about a new cybersecurity risk emerging from the systems that regulate electrical power inside modern electronics and infrastructure. Direct current, or DC, power regulators are responsible for stabilizing voltage in devices ranging from smartphones and connected vehicles to servers and telecommunications equipment. These components ensure that systems receive consistent power and avoid damage from surges or fluctuations. As modern computing environments grow more complex and power-hungry, the technologies used to regulate electricity have also become more sophisticated, which expands the potential attack surface for cyber threats. Security experts noted that the power layer has historically been overlooked as a cybersecurity concern. DC regulators operate beneath the operating system and outside the areas typically monitored by antivirus or endpoint security tools. Because of this, attackers who gain access to power management components could potentially manipulate voltage levels or power behavior without being detected by traditional security controls. In some cases, incidents that appear to be unexplained, equipment failures, or physical damage could also stem from malicious interference with power systems rather than simple hardware faults. Another factor increasing risk is that many modern power regulators are no longer passive electronic components. They are now programmable, firmware-driven systems that control how electricity is delivered to hardware. Once these devices incorporate software and firmware, they inherit the same types of vulnerabilities seen in other software systems. Researchers point out that programmable power management products from major semiconductor vendors already appear in vulnerability databases with multiple reported CVEs that shift. That shift means power regulation technology can introduce software supply chain risks and exploitable flaws into environments that previously treated power infrastructure as purely physical hardware. If attackers successfully exploit power regulators, the impact could range from localized outages to large-scale disruptions. Manipulating the regulator supplying electricity in multiple servers could allow an attacker to trigger a denial-of-service condition without directly attacking each system individually. In larger environments, such as data centers or industrial systems, the consequences could be even more significant. In operational technology environments, compromised power control components could affect safety, critical systems, including embedded electronics in vehicles or other industrialized automation platforms. Security experts argue that organizations should begin treating power management infrastructure as part of their broader cybersecurity architecture. Measures such as monitoring power components for abnormal behavior, segmenting management interfaces, and enforcing secure firmware controls like cryptographic signing and secure boot can help reduce risk. As computing systems continue to demand more power and rely on increasingly complex power management technologies, researchers expect this layer of infrastructure to become more attractive for attackers. So yeah, I saw this one. I just read the headline and thought I'd include it. I think it's interesting because I know there's so much talk right now about the power grid being actually a choke point for AI growth and just, again, how things are becoming more power hungry and more sophisticated. And I know we've seen stuff like this when we think about Now I'm drawing a blank. The Iranian centrifuge attack. Help me out here, Matt.
Shamu? No.
The big one.
Stuxnet.
Stuxnet. Yeah.
There we go.
That was exactly what they did, or a similar kind of thing to what they did. So I just find it interesting that we've got this layer of evolving technology that is actually becoming a attack surface because it's getting smarter.
I don't know if I'd say becoming an attack service. I think it's been an attack service for quite a while here. I just think the attention is being drawn to it for certain reasons. And, you know, things are just a little bit maybe different now. And that's not to discount the importance of an article like this, Chris. But I think perhaps a different way to look at it is, you know, we've continued to see these devices become more and more dependent on being connected to the internet or being connected to some sorts of wires and whatnot. And then figuring out that, like, you know, and I'm kind of zooming in on this here, the advancement of technology in, you know, the regulators and things like that. And looking at it here, organizations can no longer consider regulators as passive components that simply deliver voltage. They're programmable, they're firmware driven systems. Like, there's more to it now. And I just think this is just an effect, if you will, of, hey, there's more technology involved, which, as you and I have discussed for years now, creates a bigger attack surface. Like, that equation has always flowed together, if you will. And I think it's just something that, you know, we just kind of need to keep aware of, if you will, because as we've mentioned here, organizations, you know, already familiar with this would need to, you know, apply protocols that enterprise networks do as well. And they're just, they don't have the need to do that. They're not treated as part of the normal, kind of security architecture, OT, IT. It's always a kind of a secondary side discussion as opposed to the primary focus. And I think what this article is correctly calling out is you need to treat it more like your primary attack surface because there are inherent vulnerabilities there. I think it's a good call out. I just think it's kind of, yeah. Like, I remember when you and I have had discussions before about, like, you know, IoT attack surfaces and devices. And I think your favorite is your Bluetooth connected toothbrush and everything like that. And it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, more technology is going to make it a thing, you know?
Yeah. And I think with emerging technology too, like, or as it's getting more complex, it's not part of the normal widely known attack surface. So the people making it aren't thinking about security. So it takes, like, some incidents and some pushback from industry before these things come out in more of a hardened state where right now they might be, you know, doing things like passing text and plain text and stuff like that. All right.
Absolutely.
The next one I threw in here because I noticed Claude launched Claude Security today, which I think does static analysis of software. And we're not gonna get into that one. But you know, just the reaction that the world has to this stuff. Japan's financial sector is responding to concerns around Anthropic's new AI model, Claude Mythos, which some officials believe could significantly impact cybersecurity. On April 24th, senior figures from Japan's financial system, including the finance minister, the central bank governor, executives from the country's three largest banks, and representatives from the stock exchange, met in Tokyo to establish a working group focused on assessing the risk posed by advanced AI systems. The meeting reflects growing concern that AI is capable of identifying software vulnerabilities at scale could potentially undermine systems that financial institutions rely on. According to Anthropic, internal testing showed Mythos was able to identify previously unknown vulnerabilities across multiple browsers and operating systems. In some cases, it discovered longstanding flaws that had remained undetected for decades and demonstrated the ability to chain multiple vulnerabilities together in a working exploit path. These findings have heightened fears among financial regulators and bank lenders that advanced AI could accelerate vulnerability discovery and potentially enable attackers to compromise critical systems more quickly. During a press conference, Japan's finance minister described the existence of such capabilities as a potential crisis scenario for the financial system. Despite the concern from financial authorities, cybersecurity experts are more cautious about the severity of the threat. Anthropic has limited access to the Mythos model to a small group of trusted organizations for security research purposes. Some regulators outside the United States have already begun pressuring the company to expand access so that their institutions can evaluate the technology themselves. However, experts warn that expanding access too quickly could increase the risk of unauthorized use or leaks, particularly given reports that individuals connected to a contractor were able to infer internal model endpoints based on leaked naming conventions. Security professionals also emphasize that the broader impact of Mythos may be less dramatic than some fear. While the model appears capable of identifying vulnerabilities and chaining them together, researchers note that many real-world cyber attacks do not rely on newly discovered exploits. Instead, attackers often succeed by abusing misconfigurations, stolen credentials, or well-known vulnerabilities that organizations have not yet patched. From that perspective, advanced AI tools may accelerate vulnerability discovery, but they do not fundamentally change the underlying dynamics of most cyber attacks. Even so, the financial sector remains particularly sensitive to cybersecurity risks because the global financial system depends heavily on trust in digital systems that store and process financial data. Large banks tend to operate highly centralized infrastructure, which can increase the potential impact of successful compromise. For that reason, institutions are likely to continue closely monitoring development around advanced AI security tools like Mythos, while focusing on strengthening their existing defenses and vulnerability management process. Yeah, it's interesting because I did see some analysis today that was talking about exactly this, where finding the vulnerability is such a small part of the resources that go into creating an exploit that can be deployed in the wild, that even though the exploits may become more available, it's the, you know, $2,000 to $5,000 of development time it takes to try and turn that into an exploit that's going to be the bottleneck for most attackers, where they're just looking for point and click stuff they can find online and find the guy that didn't configure the thing right.
Chris, the head of marketing at Anthropic, deserves whatever the Nobel Prize of marketing is, or gold medals in the Olympics, or whatever that is from a marketing perspective, they deserve it, because my gosh, what a scare tactic that has been released out there into the world. And it blows my mind to fathom how many discussions are being generated by this. An entire nation's financial system is getting all up in arms and worried about an AI model that it doesn't even have access to, that no one has access to, and it's never seen. And we're listening to statistical reports about what this thing can do and whatnot, but a crisis is already upon us. Friends, you're a couple years behind in that one. All right. But the thing that we're zooming in on, Chris, I want to understand what the catalyst is, because this is really the interesting part here. AI has been a massive enabler tool for a lot of people, red team, blue team, purple team in the middle, on the outside, so on and so forth. Everyone's benefited from it in some way, shape, or form. You and I have already discussed workflow automations. I've seen what Lima Charlie's done from a security perspective and some of the ways that you guys have integrated it. Let's just call it what it is. It's a force multiplier for a lot of people, good and bad. Okay. To all of a sudden be like, oh my gosh, that's the force multiplier. What is it that has you so wrapped up about this? Oh, it can discover vulnerabilities. To this article's credit, and as you mentioned, so what? Mm-hmm. You are concerned about someone finding a vulnerability in legacy software, and yet the way in is a misconfigured RDP terminal. Let's be honest, and I apologize for this little soapbox rant, but from a cybersecurity perspective, this is being concerned about the number of cylinders in a Ferrari when your Honda Civic needs a service. And I don't mean anything by that from a manufacturer perspective. I'm talking vehicular capabilities and maintenance levels of where they're at. I've had conversations, Chris, with people who I know for a fact, they don't know how to trace a DNS entry in their environment. And they're turning around oh, Mythos is going to, we got to do all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, friends, let's get back to basics, which is what security needs here. Everyone is kind of chasing this idea of advanced state, advanced adversaries, and you're still getting hit with drive-by downloads and adware toolbars. So I'm going to ask the industry to take a beat and calm down for a moment here. Number one. And number two, let's see the data in action and stick to the basic security principles. And this is the thing I haven't heard yet, Chris, is I haven't heard the AI model that is able to defeat basic security principles. All right. An exploit in an operating system requires access to that operating system. An exploit in a program requires access to that particular program. Okay. I think everyone's treating this thing as Mythos, whatever you want to call it, is going to basically hit the internet. And then it's going to be like, all right, I own this piece. And it's just going to take over everything. And it's kind of like, that's not how it's going to work, number one. Number two, invest in the right defenses. I mean, why is the immediate jump to this thing is going to destroy us and not this thing can enable us, mm-hmm. right? Which is how I'd rather see the conversation being taken, as like, all right, you know, I feel like what the industry position has become is, okay, well, if Anthropic's not going to let anybody else play with it, well, then we're all doomed. And it's like, well, you know, if you and I talked about this last week, like, I mean, there are ways to get access to it, right? But if no one has access to it, then no one has access to it. Like, this is akin very much, Chris, to you and I creating a company and then advertising to the world like we've created the world's most successful exploit development company. And we have a 73% success rate in finding exploits. And look at this crazy thing. Look at this. Look at that. And we can provide a few examples out there and get everyone shaking. Like, that just doesn't seem logical.
Well, and it's funny that today they launched Claude Security about a month after they did the big hype around Claude Mythos. So it's like they're both the illness and the cure, right?
Well, and even then, like a lot of these security variants of LLMs, for anyone who's reading into it, they're mostly geared around scanning code and looking for vulnerabilities. So they're trained on best practices of programming languages. This is not an adversarial LLM that is modeled after the latest and greatest hackers and intelligence units and all this kind of stuff. Like, I want to insert a line here in what's actually happening. Like, yes, there are a lot of people shipping a lot of buggy code. Yes, a lot of that buggy code, Fortinet, could be resolved and cleaned and fixed up. And would that limit the number of cyber incidents? I think so. Like in pure generalized form, yes, it would.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
But okay, so we ship cleaner code. Like, is the assumption now like, oh, well, if we ship cleaner code, well, then the adversaries are just going to make even better and bigger exploits and our cleaner code won't matter anymore. And I was like, that's not how this works. Like, it's anyways, neither here nor there.
It's still going to be password links and social engineering and all the normal all boring stuff. Yeah.
All day. It's still going to be people clicking phishing emails.
Yeah. All right. Glad we got that out of our system. The next two are from Zach Allen's Detection Engineering Weekly newsletter. So some good quality here. Docker and Socket. Oh, and since we're mentioning Socket, I just want to give a shout out to Mr. John Tuckner from Security Annex.
Yeah, Security Annex.
They were acquired by Socket, and John's going to be working with that team to help secure software supply chain. So just really awesome to watch your journey from when you left Tynes to do your own thing to the success of getting acquired by Socket. So bravo, John. We're all very happy for you and look forward to seeing what you do next. So
let me give a little bit of background here, Chris, because it's entirely important that we call this out. Number one, John Tuckner, a friend of both of ours, launched Secure Annex. You and I were actually both there at the Mission Control when he launched it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And we saw the talk where he launched it and talked about it, and we've watched over the past few years the success rise and the popularity of it go. John, huge hat tip to you for the acquisition. But man, Chris, it's so cool to be there at the beginning. And I'm not even going to call this the end. We're going to call this the next cycle of maturity. And it's just great to see. John, we're super proud of you, man.
Yeah, bravo, sir. All right, back to it. Docker and Socket researchers discovered that malicious images were pushed to the official checkmarks/kicks Docker Hub repository, indicating a supply chain compromise affecting the kicks infrastructure as code scanning tool. Monitoring flagged suspicious activity around kicks tags, and investigators found that attackers overwrote existing tags while also introducing tags that did not correspond to a legitimate release. The modified images contain tampered kicks binary with added data collection and exfiltration capabilities. When the scanner runs, it can generate uncensored scan reports containing sensitive infrastructure configuration data, encrypt them, and send them to an external endpoint. Because Kix scans Terraform, CloudFormation, and Kubernetes configurations, any secrets or credentials in these files could be exposed if the compromised images were used. The investigation expanded beyond container images to Checkmarx developer tooling, particularly certain VS Code extensions. The bun runtime. On activation, the extension silently downloads a file called mcpaddon.js from a hard-coded GitHub URL referencing a specific commit in a Checkmarx repository. The file is written to a specific location and executed immediately. The component collects credentials and environment data from developer systems, encrypts the results, and exfiltrates them both to external infrastructure and to public GitHub repositories created by the malware. The MCP add-on.js payload acts as a credential and token stealer. It enumerates authentication data from multiple platforms, including GitHub tokens, AWS credentials, Azure tokens, Google Cloud credential databases, NPM configuration files, SSH keys, and environment variables. That's all the bad stuff you don't want them to get. On Windows systems, it executes commands such as GitHub auth token, gcloud config, config helper, a bunch more to retrieve authentication information. The stolen data is compressed, encrypted, and transmitted to audit.checkmarks/telemetry. There's a URL there. In parallel, the malware abuses compromised GitHub credentials to automatically create public repositories used as staging locations for encrypted results containing fields labeled envelope, key, and token. The operation also includes automated lateral movement within GitHub and NPM ecosystems. Using stolen GitHub tokens, the malware identifies repositories the victim can modify and injects a malicious GitHub actions workflow. The workflow serializes the entire secrets context, writes it to a file, and uploads it as an artifact that attackers can retrieve later. After obtaining secrets, the campaign can pivot to the NPM ecosystem by using stolen NPM credentials to identify packages the victim can publish to and republish them with malicious payloads. Organizations that use the effective artifacts are advised to treat the event as a credential exposure incident, remove compromised components, rotate credentials, and review repositories and CI/CD pipelines for unauthorized workflows or repository creation. So yeah, this is nasty. And again, seeing those GitHub automated workflows as a vulnerability is something we've seen, I think, for 2-3 years now keep popping up.
You know, Chris, I was reading about this software supply chain attack. And it's just, it's interesting to see, you know, this is the yes culture. Would you like to install the thing? Yes. And unfortunately, you know, it's one of these situations to where, how the best way for me to formulate this, because I don't think this is one of those situations where people were just like, yes, give me the thing, like OpenClaw. Right. I think this is one of those where folks probably had something installed. Its dependencies went malicious. And, you know, it's one of those like it ended up kind of biting people a little bit by doing all the stuff they were supposed to do. And the reason why I'm framing it this way is because it is an MCP based attack. And what I mean by that is it is taking advantage of an MCP add-on, which is like kind of like the way that we've been told to do things. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, this is how we should do stuff. We should install the MCPs, authenticate this way, do this, do that, so on and so forth. I mean, everything here lined up. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, some malicious software showed up and boom, now you've got a MCP that is actively exfiltrating data. And as you mentioned, the worst of data too, like keys, NPM config files, environment variables, MCPs for other AI tools and whatnot. And it's just one of those like, man, damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you're not up on the latest, Chris, you're going to miss out on all the hubbub. But if you download the latest, who knows? You might end up getting compromised. And it's like, is everyone reading every single library they install and they download? And unfortunately not. And I think this Checkmarks VS Code extension was, you know, the perfect example of an adversary finding a way to insert a malicious file or insert a malicious package and get someone to download stuff. Yeah. And unfortunately, here we are. And then it's like a giant bundle, mangled identifiers, all sorts of obfuscation dropped in place and whatnot. An embedded script, embedded GitHub actions, a hard-coded RSA key. I mean, all these things that if you saw them on the surface in individual files, you'd be like, oh, okay, I see what this is. But when it's all jumbled up like this, you evade scanning. It makes it difficult for people to see. I mean, it's all over the place. So, you know, apologies to the folks, not from Chris and myself, but apologies to the folks who are having to deal with these issues where you're kind of like, man, I just can't catch a break with securing these tools.
Yeah. And there's some really nasty exfiltration in that. Like these guys are fishing for some big hits.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I'm just telling you right now, pulling back all those configs and everything that they were doing, like, these are some heavy hitters. Yeah. And what I mean by that is these are some damaging things if an adversary gets a hold of them.
Yeah.
Azure authentication, AWS, Google Cloud, SSH. I mean, if you're a developer, you're using these tools, you get compromised here. That's a lot of sensitive stuff flying out the door.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to know how much you've been impacted, and it means rotating all of those things and like that. What a bad Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. Could have been. Yeah,
probably bad Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. This is what we call a weekend destroyer.
Yeah. All right. Last one we got for today. JFrog security researchers identified a malicious NPM package published as Bitwarden/CLI version 2026.4.0 that impersonates the legitimate Bitwarden command line client. The package preserved the expected Bitwarden branding and metadata, but altered the execution path so that a custom loader runs instead of the real CLI binary. The loader executes automatically during installation and when the CLI command is invoked. Analysis shows that the underlying bundled application still references Bitwarden CLI 2026.3.0, suggesting the attacker repackaged an older legitimate build and inserted malicious code into the distribution layer. The loader first checks whether the bun runtime is present on the system. If it is not installed, the malware downloads bun from GitHub and uses it to execute an obfuscated JavaScript payload. This technique allows the attacker to run the malicious code regardless of the target environment's existing runtime configuration. Once deobfuscated, the payload reveals a broad credential theft operation focused on developer workstations and CI environments. It targets authentication tokens, SSH material, shell history, and credentials associated with GitHub, NPM, and multiple cloud platforms, including AWS, Google Cloud, and Microsoft Azure. There's like a pattern in the air.
Right? A little bit.
The malware collects information from several sources on the compromised system. It scans for developer credential files, configuration files, and other locations where secrets are commonly stored. It also executes commands to retrieve active authentication tokens and environment variables from the system. In addition to standard developer credentials, the malware specifically searches for configuration files related to AI development tools and model control frameworks, suggesting that attackers are intentionally targeting environments where coding assistance or automation tools may expose API keys or workflow credentials. After gathering credentials and configuration data, the payload encrypts the results and exfiltrates them to a remote endpoint associated with a campaign. The malware compresses the collected data and encrypts it using a hybrid encryption scheme combining AES and RSA before submitting it over HTTPS. If the primary exfiltration channel fails, the payload falls back to GitHub-based mechanisms. It retrieves stage tokens from commit messages and creates repositories under the victim's account where encrypted result files can be uploaded, effectively using GitHub as a secondary command and control and data exfiltration channel. The malware also weaponizes stolen GitHub tokens to expand access beyond the initially compromised system. After validating a token through the GitHub API, the payload enumerates repositories that the victim can modify and attempts to extract secrets from automation workflows. It can create a new branch, inject a workflow file designed to capture secrets, trigger the workflow execution, and retrieve the resulting artifacts containing sensitive information. Combined with its ability to harvest cloud credentials, developer tokens, and repository access, the malicious package creates multiple pathways for attackers to expand the compromise across developer systems, CI/CD pipelines, and cloud infrastructure. So yeah, man, both these last two are like, these are, you know, highly skilled, well put together attack vectors with some really sensitive stuff. And I think we're seeing like the CI/CD pipeline is like a big target for these guys.
Chris, this is actually the same thing.
Did we double up on it?
We kind of, but this is actually a more of a technical article, actually, and it goes through some of the different details. So I like the fact that you called it out. I think the previous one focused on the package, whereas right. this one focuses on the team PCP campaign. So I'm not going to make a big deal about it.
That's interesting because the last one mentions check marks and Docker yeah. Hub repository, and this one...
This one was Bitwarden CLI, but take a look. It's actually the exact same telemetry, the exact same C2. Here All I right. am doing some really quick infosec correlation, but it's the same C2. And look at what they're stealing. The exact same,
things. Look at that.
Yeah. So I think we are going to continue to see constant package abuse here. I think we're getting caught up. Team PCP seems to be getting busy.
Wow.
If you will. You yeah. know what I mean? Yeah. But in any event, sorry.
Different targets, same yeah. approach. Yeah.
Different targets, same approach. This time they're going after the Bitwarden CLI. I think this is going to kind of be a continuation. I think we're going to continue to see these types of team PCP campaigns after, as they gain more access into different libraries, as they get access to different developers, as they target different folks. I mean, really as the spread of their campaign kind of reaches out there, We're going to continue to see more and more of this. So nothing to refresh from a technical perspective, but just kind of a final reminder for everyone. Like if you're downloading and using these types of packages and whatnot, be careful, folks. Be careful where you're downloading from. Don't believe the number of stars. Don't believe a good looking developer name. Double check. Follow your team protocols and do all sorts of things like that. And let them, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? Make sure that you are, you know, only giving access to files that you need to give access to. Otherwise, you know, limit and scope what these things actually can do.
Yeah, and make sure all your credentials and auth tokens and stuff are stored in a way that's not putting them into GitHub commits and stuff like that.
Yes, so. That too. Be careful with all of the things. Yes, yeah. Great advice.
Awesome. Thanks for coming out again, Matt. I'm going to go take my nap now.
Please do, Chris. Always a pleasure when we get to chat, man. Enjoy your nap and congrats again.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
All right, man. See ya.
And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.